Welcome to the Deep Dive. Our mission today is really to cut through the noise, deliver that critical, actionable intelligence you need from the latest commercial real estate news. And we are setting our sights squarely on, well, the economic engine of the American South, Dallas-Fort Worth. We're zoning in on DFW's retail market specifically because it presents this really fascinating paradox right now. You know, while the national headlines are screaming about systemic distress, particularly in office, and maybe some consumer caution, certain sectors right here in DFW, like top-tier retail and industrial, they're actually attracting massive institutional capital, setting new benchmarks even.
That divergence is absolutely the key insight for any investor listening right now. We are seeing a profound separation, I mean, really, between the high-performing assets and, well, everything else. And DFW is, frankly, maximizing its position on the winning side of that split. So today, we'll unpack the data points, the proof, really, showing why DFW remains such a top-tier investment hub, and we'll analyze exactly how its retail strength, in particular, is defying those national trends, giving you that essential context for your strategy.
Okay, let's dive into that. Starting with what we're calling trophy asset resilience right here in Dallas retail. And the proof point is pretty unmistakable. North Park Center.
Yeah, North Park. They recently finalized this huge $1.2 billion refinancing deal. And this transaction, it allowed the mall, we're talking nearly 2 million square feet of prime retail, to return to the full ownership of the founding Nasher-Hamisager family. That number alone, $1.2 billion, it signals immense sustained confidence from lenders. Confidence in the stability, the scarcity of premier retail in these elite markets.
That figure is certainly an anomaly, a big one in today's climate. Is premier retail now officially, like, immune? I mean, we just saw Wells Fargo, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs back that deal. Are they underwriting the asset because its cash flow is just so proven? Or is it mainly about underwriting the stability of the sponsors? Does that $1.2 billion truly reflect the health of the broader luxury market, you think?
I think it reflects both, but primarily it's the asset's unparalleled performance. North Park's cash flow, it's genuinely exceptional. The malls remain virtually, like, 100% leased for decades. That's key. And critically, non-anchor tenant sales performance registers at $1,588 per square foot.
Wow, 1588.
Yeah. And that statistic is stunning when you compare it to the national mall average, which is barely a third of that figure, sitting at just at $596 per square foot.
Big difference.
Huge. So that performance gap, anchored by luxury tenants, you know, Louis Vuitton, Prada, Tiffany, combined with their unique artist amenity strategy, it basically ensures top-tier financing will always be available for an asset like that.
Okay, so that covers the established luxury core in Dallas itself. But let's look at the other side of DFW retail, this explosive, almost irrational demand happening out in the rapidly developing northern suburbs.
Right. This is where the demographic influx is just creating unprecedented market pressure. In DFW's affluent northern corridor, we're talking Prosper, Selena, Melissa Retail, asking rents have gone, well, parabolic. We've seen rents jump from maybe the mid $30 per square foot, easily over $50 for new construction.
$50.
Wait. Yeah. That's an increase of what, up to 40% in a very short time frame.
A 40% spike in suburban retail rents.
Yeah.
That's hard to wrap your head around. What fundamentally changed the math there?
It's really a perfect storm. You've got massive population growth meeting extreme wealth plus high barriers to entry. You have areas like South Lake, right, where the average household income exceeds $380,000. That creates an incredibly sticky customer base. At the same time, construction costs are ballooning, land prices skyrocketing. It requires developers to push rents to that $50 plus level just to make the numbers work on a new project.
And these are markets that were basically fields 10 years ago.
Exactly. And DFW overall saw very strong 4.3% annual retail rent growth in Q3. That makes it one of the top performing metros in the entire country for retail right now.
So we've established DFW's local strength, kind of defying the broader narrative. Let's zoom out now to the national context. What are the wider retail trends that maybe affirm DFW's strength? And what are the headwinds the rest of the country is really facing?
Nationally, you definitely see that divergence playing out. Necessity versus discretionary. Grocery-anchored and necessity-based retail, that remains the bedrock. Super resilient. We saw this recently with Federal Realty. They secured, I think, $73.3 million in long-term fixed-rate refinancing for two quality retail properties out in Phoenix. That shows lenders, like PNC in this case, still have high confidence in those necessity-based assets, you know, insulated from economic swings. And properties with top-tier grocers, like a Trader Joe's, they're selling for an average of $253 per square foot. Confirms that premium on essential services.
Right. And the national shakeup in like the big box retail space that's accelerated with some high profile bankruptcies. But that space isn't just sitting empty, is it?
No, not really. It's actually a story of pretty rapid adaptation, re-tenanting. I mean, we saw the big failure of Rite Aid closing all its remaining, 1,250 stores. But those empty big boxes, they're not becoming ghost malls. They're being backfilled, often quite quickly. The trend is clearly off-price, and discount retailers, think Burlington, Ross, TJ Maxx, Five Below, they're all looking for expansion opportunities.
Taking advantage.
Exactly. Actively absorbing these vacated spaces, including former Party City locations. Too. So thanks to this aggressive demand from value concepts, the overall U.S. retail vacancy rate, it remains surprisingly low, hovering around, say, 4% to 5% on average.
Okay, so even with that underlying strength and adaptation, the big headwind affecting confidence right now is the holiday spending outlook, right? What are the latest projections telling us?
Yeah, the outlook is definitely cautious. Inflation, uncertainty, it's eroding purchasing power. The National Retail Federation, the NRF, they projected average holiday spending to decline slightly, about 1.3% year over year, down to $890.49 per person.
Still high historically, but a decline.
Right. It's still the second highest figure in their survey's history, I believe, 23 years. But it is a definite cutback from the peak. Consumers are just expecting higher prices, inflation, tariffs. It's leading them to trim back discretionary spending. Deloitte's forecasting total holiday sales growth somewhere between 2.9% and 3.4%.
Which is slow growth.
Which is significantly the slowest rate of growth recorded since the pandemic hit back in 2020.
Okay. That economic backdrop brings us neatly back to DFW and the sort of foundational pillars supporting its growth beyond just retail. Let's shift focus now to the city's dominance in industrial and increasingly data centers.
This is really DFW's superpower at the moment, industrial. The metro currently leads the entire U.S. in industrial construction, a staggering 28 million square feet underway right now.
28 million.
And the institutional capital pouring into this sector is immense. We saw Blackstone acquire a 95% interest in a multi-state portfolio. That included the huge Core 35 industrial park near DFW. It just proves the continued appeal of scale and logistics here. And then there's the data center boom, which is absolutely centered significantly in Texas. Dallas-based DataBank, for instance, recently expanded its credit facility to $1.6 billion. That's to finance new data center construction in multiple markets, including Dallas, of course. And even bigger picture, we're seeing this record $38 billion debt sale nearing completion. It's funding two massive new data center projects tied to Oracle, and one includes a cutting-edge campus right here in Texas.
And these huge digital logistical investments, they translate directly into high-value, long-term jobs for the region, right? Mm-hmm. Reinforcing that strong suburban demographic base we talked about earlier.
Precisely, yeah. Take the aerospace sector, for example. Embraer, the Brazilian aerospace giant, they're investing $70 million to build a new 300,000 square foot maintenance, repair, and overhaul facility, MRO facility, that's out at Alliance, Texas. And that single expansion is set to create around 500 new jobs, pretty much immediately.
Okay, now let's turn to the DFW office market. Nationally, office is clearly the most troubled sector. But DFW seems to be holding up relatively well, though, you know, not without its own issues.
Yeah, the story in DFW office is really that intense flight to quality. While overall vacancy is definitely high, top-tier companies are consolidating operations here. DFW is rapidly establishing itself as a finance hub, an epicenter. Wells Fargo, for instance, just delivered its new $570 million, 850,000-square-foot campus out in Irving. And what's important here is that it's the company's first net positive energy campus, designed to generate more energy than it uses annually. Pretty innovative.
Impressive.
And Goldman Sachs is also building that enormous 800,000-square-foot campus just north of downtown Dallas.
So unlike maybe some traditional gateway markets where offices are still pretty empty, is Dallas genuinely bucking that trend in terms of usage?
It is showing greater resilience, yeah. Dallas office attendance is tracked at, I believe, 62.8% of pre-pandemic levels, which puts it second only to Austin among the U.S. cities they track.
Still not 100%, but better than many.
Much better than, say, San Francisco or New York, shows a stronger commitment to the physical office here. However, we absolutely have to acknowledge the distress. The uptown landlord Harwood International, they quietly offloaded four of their prime office buildings to TPG, an opportunistic buyer. And this was a deal that essentially stopped an imminent foreclosure threat on at least one of those towers. So it illustrates that even here in relatively strong DFW, opportunistic capital is entering, but at a discount for assets needing a complete financial reset.
Okay, bringing this discussion full circle then, let's talk about the national financing landscape, because this environment, it colors everything, right? All acquisitions, including those high-end DFW retail and industrial deals we talked about.
Right. Officially, the sentiment is improving slightly. NAIOP's sentiment index, it ticked up to 56, which suggests industry leaders expect more favorable conditions maybe in the next 12 months, driven largely by hopes, expectations of declining interest rates.
But the prevailing reality still feels like higher for longer, which is putting just catastrophic pressure on that debt wall facing the industry.
It absolutely is. We have roughly, $1.5 trillion in commercial real estate debt maturing by the end of 2025.
Trillion with a T.
Yeah. And lenders are actively managing, or maybe more accurately, delaying this distress. We saw loan modifications surge to a record $11.2 billion in Q3 alone. 67% of that volume. Simple maturity extensions, concentrated primarily in the really troubled sectors, office and hotel.
So are these massive modifications genuinely kicking the can down the road, or are they real workouts? How much of that $1.5 trillion debt wall is just sort of hiding in those modified loan figures?
It's mostly the former. It's kicking the can. And that's why we need to clarify that term you hear all the time. Extend and pretend.
Right.
This is where lenders grant extensions so they don't have to immediately classify the loan as non-performing, and they don't have to mark the underlying asset down to its current lower market value. It postpones the reckoning, basically, but it doesn't solve the fundamental debt problem long term. This financial pressure is also pushing investors, those seeking liquidity, towards some unconventional mechanisms.
Oh, you mean the CRE secondaries market? For listeners maybe less familiar, can you explain what's heating up there?
Yeah, the CRE secondaries market. It's where investors sell their existing partnership stakes, like in private REITs or joint ventures. They sell their equity shares. Instead of waiting for the fund's traditional exit, which is tough right now because there aren't many traditional buyers and rates are high.
So they can't get out the normal way.
Right. Since many of these closed-end funds are locked up, global secondaries transactions hit, I think, $24.3 billion last year. Investors are often willing to sell their stakes at a pretty steep discount, maybe 10%, even 20% below the net asset value, just to get cash now. It's really a tactical retreat driven by illiquidity, not necessarily a strategic exit from real estate altogether.
Okay, so if the name of the game is cash flow preservation, survival until rates hopefully drop, what does this environment demand from DFW investors, particularly those focused on stabilization, whether it's in retail or industrial?
The strategic reset, yeah, it's absolutely centered on cash flow first. That's the mantra. Investors are now heavily prioritizing stabilized assets, assets with extremely predictable income streams, like that grocery-anchored retail we mentioned, or high-end destination retail like North Park, or well-leased specialized industrial properties. And the playbook now requires adopting much lower leverage, often funding 40%, maybe even 50% of the deal with equity.
De-risking the capital stack.
Exactly. And pursuing value-add strategies, but with significantly longer hold periods, thinking 7, maybe 10 years out, just to ensure they can weather the current rate environment and refinance only when conditions hopefully ease up.
All right. So to summarize the map for you, the listener, DFW is profoundly segmented right now. Industrial and specialized prime retail are booming, supported by massive global institutional capital, especially with that data center surge, the office market. It's attracting those deep-pocketed opportunistic buyers, sure, but only at a significant discount, and usually in situations needing a full financial reset.
And that strategic segmentation is just so vital, because the spread between CRE winners and losers, you know, between the North Parks of the world and the distressed B-minus office blocks, that spread is currently at a 40-year high. This means picking the right market and the right sector is more critical now for capital preservation and for growth than it has been in decades.
Okay, so final thought. Given that extraordinary rent growth we discussed in DFW's northern suburbs, driven by demographics, wealth, scarcity, that jump to $50 a square foot, we have to ask this kind of provocative question. Will that relentless population influx eventually push even traditionally discretionary concepts, think fast casual dining, specialized services, will it push them into becoming functional necessities in those areas? I mean, if the household incomes are high enough, does that high-quality suburban retail essentially become impervious to national holiday spending slowdowns? That, for us, feels like the core strategic question defining the future of DFW retail growth, something to really chew on